Okay, we're ready to go. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul, and tonight we are going to continue our study on the paper 130 on the way to Rome, and we're in section, look here, number 5, on the island of Crete, and that starts on page 1436.2 or paper 135.1 in all the rest of the books. And there it comes on. And so we're ready to start, I believe, here. Oops. Get my mouse over here. Approved. Okay, dear. Would you like to take the first paragraph? Let me change this front screen. There we go. There's Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hey, Jane.
Okay. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. We're all good. All right.
Hey,
Five.
wonderful.
Five
Five
on
on
the
the Iceland.
Island.
Iceland.
Yeah,
let's start over. Let's start
it
over.
could be Hoodler. I don't know.
On
The
the
Iceland
Iceland
of
of Crete.
Crete.
On the island of Crete.
Roger,
Okay.
you might need to mute.
Oh, I need to be you. Thanks, Rodney.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. One, the travelers had but one purpose in mind to going to Crete, and that was to play, to walk about over the island and to climb the mountains. The Cretans of that time did not enjoy an inevitable reputation. And then I need to stop. Okay. Inventiable. Okay. Reputation among the surrounding peoples. Nevertheless, Jesus and Gennad won many souls to higher levels of thinking and living, and thus laid the foundation for the quick reception of the latter gospel teachings when the first preachers from Jerusalem arrived. Jesus loved these Cretans, notwithstanding the harsh words which Paul later I just have to spoke concerning them when he subsequently sent Titus to the island to recognize, reorganize their churches.
I need to do that again.
Okay, so the Cretans didn't have a great reputation during that period of time, and Paul didn't like them very much because he sent Titus to reorganize their churches because he didn't like the way they were run. Of course, Paul wanted to run everything, you know. What can I say? Enough said about Paul. Okay, let's go on. This is the picture of the island of Crete. You can see right here, not to be confused with Cyprus over here. Right? Because Cyprus was the one that we talked about a couple weeks ago, even last week, the week before, that this we believe that this was part of the original Garden of Eden where Adam and Eve was, right? Not Dalmatia, but the first Garden of Eden for Adam and Eve. So this is Crete here, and they got there from Alexandria, which was down here. So they took a boat and got there. That's what that boat is about on the front screen we had today. And here's another picture of Crete, and it shows where the mountains are in Crete. All right, we got a couple more pictures here. Here's another one. Here's the Cretan Sea and Libyan Sea. All right, and here's some pictures of the mountains there and the farming, windmills there, which probably are still there, and some ruins, and another of the mountains. So this is where Jesus and got in Gaden, walked around and talked to people and that sort of thing. Okay. Very interesting. Okay, let's see. Rodney, would you like to go next?
Yes. On the mountainside in Crete, Jesus had his first long talk with Gennad regarding religion. And the father was much impressed, saying, "No wonder the boy believes everything you tell him. But I never knew they had such a religion, even in Jerusalem, much less in Damascus." It was during the island sojourn that Gennad first proposed to Jesus that he go back to India with them. And Gennad was delighted with the thought that Jesus might consent to such an arrangement.
And of course he didn't, did he? He had his own plans coming up shortly after this. All right. Let's see. Letch, would you take the next one, please?
Yes. One day when Ganad asked Jesus why he had not devoted himself to the work of a public teacher, he said, "My son, everything must await the coming of its time. You are born into the world, but no amount of anxiety and no manifestation of impatience will help you to grow up. You must, in all such matters, wait upon time. Time alone will ripen the green fruit upon the tree. Season follows season, and sundown follows sunrise, only with the passing of time. I am now on the way to Rome with you and your father, and that is sufficient for today. My tomorrow is wholly in the hands of my Father in heaven." And then he told Ganad the story of Moses and the 40 years of watchful waiting and continued preparation.
And they were roaming around in the desert for 40 years, so he couldn't get in a hurry, could he? So,
no.
Okay. Jane, could you take the next one? Is that too small for you, Jane?
I think I might be able to do it. I got good glasses on.
Okay.
Okay. One thing happened on a visit to Fair Havens, which Ganad never forgot. The memory of this episode always caused him to wish he might do something to change the caste system of his native India. A drunken degenerate was attacking a slave girl on the public highway. When Jesus saw the plight of the girl, he rushed forward and drew the maiden away from the assault of the madman. While the frightened child clung to him, he held the infuriated man at a safe distance by his powerful extended right arm until the poor fellow had exhausted himself, beating the air with his angry blows. Ganad felt a strong impulse to help Jesus handle the affair, but his father forbade him. Though they could not speak the girl's language, he could understand that their act of mercy and gave token of her heartfelt appreciation as they all three escorted her home. This was probably as near a personal encounter with his fellows as Jesus ever had throughout his entire life in the flesh. But he had a difficult task that evening, trying to explain to Ganad why he did not smite the drunken man. Ganad thought that this man should have been struck at least as many times as he had struck the girl.
So Ganad thought he should beat the man up, basically.
I do too.
And so he couldn't understand Jesus's resistance to any kind of violence. So he tried to explain it to him later that night. So he really saved the girl. And that's the only time in his life he really had a close encounter with having a fight with another human being.
Roger?
Yes.
I think this is telling us that Jesus was right-handed.
Yeah, he may have been. He may have been. You know, it's kind of funny. You can picture this man, him holding this man back, and this guy, you know, swinging at the air. You know, you really could see that happening. And Jesus being a carpenter and a smith at one time and a boat builder, and all, he was muscular.
Oh,
yeah, you know, so he had the power to hold him back. All right, I guess it's my turn this time. The young man who was afraid.
It's a good one.
Huh?
This is a good one.
Yeah. While they were up in the mountains, Jesus had a long talk with a young man who was fearful and downcast. Failing to derive comfort and courage from association with his fellows, this youth had sought the solitude of the hills. He had grown up with a feeling of helplessness and inferiority. These natural tendencies had been augmented by numerous difficult circumstances which the lad had encountered as he grew up, notably the loss of his father, and he was 12 years of age. As they met Jesus said, "Greetings, my friend. Why so downcast on such a beautiful day? If something has happened to distress you, perhaps I can in some manner assist you. At any rate, it affords me real pleasure to proffer my services." So he offered to help out this young man with his problem, didn't he? All right. And this is what happens. It's a long one, Beard. You got it?
The young man was just disinclined to talk, and so Jesus made a second approach to his soul, saying, "I understand you come up in these hills to get away from folks, so of course you do not want to talk with me. But I would like to know whether you are familiar with these hills. Do you know the direction of the trails? And perchance, could you inform me as to the best route to Phoenix?" Now, this youth was very familiar with these mountains, and he really became much interested in telling Jesus the way to Phoenix, so much so that he marked out all of the trails on the ground and fully explained every detail. But he was startled and made curious when Jesus, after saying goodbye and making as if he were taking leave, suddenly turned to him, saying, "I well know you wish to be left alone, but your disconciliation, okay, but it would be neither kind nor fair for me to receive such generous help from you as to how best to find my way to Phoenix, and then unthinkingly to go away from you without making the least effort to answer your appealing request for help and guidance regarding the best route to the goal of destiny, which you seek in your heart while you tarry here on the mountainside. As you so well know, the trails of Phoenix, having traversed them many times, so do I well know the way to the city of your disappointed hopes and thwarted ambitions. And since you have asked me to help, I will not disappoint you."
The youth was almost overcome, but he managed to stammer out, "But I did not ask you for anything." And Jesus, laying a gentle hand on his shoulder, said, "No, son, not with words, but with the longing looks did you appeal to my heart. My boy, to one who loves his fellows, there is an eloquent appeal for help in your countenance and discouragement and despair. Sit down with me a while. I will tell you of the service trails and happiness highways which lead from the sorrows of self to the joys of loving activities in the brotherhood of man and in the service of God of heaven." Is it with you?
Yes.
All right. Rodney, would you take this one?
By this time, the young man very much desired to talk with Jesus, and he knelt at his feet, imploring Jesus to help him, to show him the way of escape from his world of personal sorrow and defeat. Said Jesus, "My friend, arise, stand up like a man. You may be surrounded with small enemies and be retarded by many obstacles, but the big things and the real things of this world and the universe are on your side. The sun rises every morning to salute you, just as it does the most powerful and prosperous man on earth. Look, you have a strong body and powerful muscles. Your physical equipment is better than the average. Of course, it is just about useless while you sit out here on the mountainside and grieve over your misfortunes, real and fancied. But you could do great things with your body if you would hasten off where great things are waiting to be done. You are trying to run away from your unhappy self, but it cannot be done. You and your problems of living are real. You cannot escape them as long as you live. But look again. Your mind is clear and capable. Your strong body has an intelligent mind to direct it. Set your mind at work to solve its problems. Teach your intellect to work for you. Refuse longer to be dominated by fear like an unthinking animal. Your mind should be your courageous ally in the solution of your problems, rather than your being, as you have been, its abject fear slave and the bond servant of depression and defeat. But most valuable of all, your potential of real achievement is the spirit which lives within you and which will stimulate and inspire your mind to control itself and activate the body if you will release it from the fetters of fear and thus enable your spiritual nature to begin your deliverance from the evils of inaction by the power presence of living faith. And then forthwith will this faith vanquish fear of men by the compelling presence of that new and all-dominating love of your fellows, which will so soon fill your soul to overflowing because of the consciousness which has been born in your heart that you are a child of God.
So Jesus basically was teaching this young man that fear was disabling him, wasn't it? It was the fear that was keeping him from acting in his life. So he had a good body and a good mind, so he had to get off his backside, literally, and start to use his mind and trust his thought adjuster to guide him to better ways and to helping his fellow human beings. And that's a big lesson. It
it's
really
a good
is.
Lesson for all of us.
It's a good lesson for all of us. It's easily become depressed and run down and fearful of everything because of all these miscellaneous things in life that goes on around us, and most of them aren't even important, right? They just aren't. They don't mean a thing. You know, we think they mean something, in reality they really don't. Letch. Would you take the next one, please?
Okay. By this time, the young
you
man...
need to change it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I changed mine down here. I didn't change yours. Okay.
This day, my son, you are to be reborn, reestablished as man of faith, courage, and devoted service to man for God's sake. And you, when you become so readjusted to life within yourself, you become likewise readjusted to the universe. You have been born again, born of the Spirit. And henceforth will your whole life become one of victorious accomplishment. Trouble will invigorate you. Disappointment will spur you on. Difficulties will challenge you, and obstacles will stimulate you. Arise, young man. Say farewell to the life of cringing fear and fleeing cowardice. Hasten back to duty and live your life in the flesh as a son of God, a mortal dedicated to the ennobling service of man on earth, and destined to the superb and eternal service of God in eternity.
What a wonderful lesson, is it not? I love the end here. A mortal dedicated to the ennobling service of man on earth and destined to the superb and eternal service of God in eternity. That's, we need to all learn that, relearn that every single day, don't we?
Yeah.
It's hard to remember when you get, you know, running around in life and unimportant things, you know. Jane, would you take the next one, please?
Okay. And this youth, fortunate subsequently, became the leader of the Christians in Crete and the close associate of Titus in his labors for the uplift of the Cretan believers.
Okay, so Titus actually helped uplift the believers there, even though Paul gave him a hard time about it, right? So,
got a cool name.
Yeah. Okay, back to the beginning again. The travelers were truly rested and refreshed when they made ready for noon one day to sail for Carthage in northern Africa. Stopping for 2 days at Cyrene, it was here that Jesus and Gaia gave first aid to a lad named Rufus, who had been injured by the breakdown of a loaded ox cart. They carried him home to his mother and his father. Simon dreamed that the man whose cross they carried him home to his mother and his father. Simon little dreamed that the man whose cross he subsequently bore by orders of the Roman soldier was the stranger who had befriended his son. So y'all understand what they're saying here? So yeah. Simon was in Jerusalem during the crucifixion. It was Simon that carried Jesus' cross when Jesus could not go any further.
The cross beam.
The cross beam, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. People don't even know that, do they? Okay, so here's a picture of them leaving Cyprus and going to Africa, right?
Cyrene.
Yeah, Cyrene, right? Did I say leaving Cyprus?
You said
Crete?
To Africa.
Yeah.
Cyrene, Africa.
Yeah, yeah. Left Crete to go to Cyrene in Africa, right? All right. Diane, you're back in.
7. The Cartridge Discourse on Time and Space. Most of the time en route to Carthage, Jesus talked about his fellow travelers, about things social, political, and commercial. Hardly a word was said about religion. For the first time, Gonad and Gandon discovered that Jesus was a good storyteller, and they kept him busy telling tales about his early life in Galilee. They also learned that he was reared in Galilee and not in either Jerusalem or Damascus.
So they had assumed that he was reared in either Jerusalem or Damascus because that's where they heard he came from, right? And so they discovered he was raised in Galilee instead. When Gaynard inquired that one could do to make friends, what one could do to make friends, having noticed that the majority of persons whom they chanced to meet were attracted to Jesus, his teacher said, become interested in your fellows, learn how to love them, and watch for the opportunity to do something for them which you are sure they want done. And then he quoted the olden Jewish proverb, a man who would have friends must show himself friendly. That's good advice, right?
Sure is.
Be friendly if you want to have friends. Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
At Carthage, Jesus had a long and memorable talk with a Mithraic priest about immortality, about time and eternity. This Persian had been educated at Alexandria, and he really desired to learn from Jesus, but into the words of today. In substance, Jesus said an answer to his many questions.
Now, remember, the Mithraic priests were the type of people that Paul grew up. He was a Mithraist, right? Before he became a Jew, or during the time he became a Jew. And so that's the type of people they're talking about. So they're wide open and ready for the message of Christianity.
So what type of religion was that?
It was Mithraeus had the same exact background as they told about Jesus. He was supposed to be born of a virgin and was crucified just like Jesus. So the whole story of him was the same one that many of the prophets during that time was told of, had the same background. He was supposed to be born of a virgin and that sort of thing. So when Paul found Christianity, it kind of fit right into his beliefs and such things. So it was closely akin to the philosophy of Christianity. And we're going to find that out in a little bit, I believe a little bit later in one of these papers that talks about Mithraism, that sort of thing. So we'll go over it again. Bletch, would you take the next one?
Sure. Time is the stream of flowing temporal events perceived by creature consciousness. Time is a name given to the succession arrangement whereby events are recognized and segregated. The universe of space is a time-related phenomenon as it is viewed from any interior position outside of the fixed abode of paradise. The motion of time is only revealed in relation to something which does not move in space as a time phenomenon. In the universe of universes, paradise and its deities transported both time and space. On the inhabited worlds, human personality, indwelt and oriented by the paradise father's spirit, is the only physically related reality which can transcend the material sequence of temporal events.
So time is just a way to keep track. It's the way to keep track of a sequence of events. You can't travel forward or backwards in time because there is, in reality, only now. And everything else is in relation to what's happening now. So time is a way to keep track of what has occurred. But this concept that you can travel in time and go backwards and forwards is poppycock, basically, right? Can't do it, can't be done. I looked at in the book every which way you can find, and it says it cannot be done. So our time is relation to paradise itself, in which there is no time and space. So everything is related to the singleness of paradise and non-motion of paradise. Jane, will you take the next one, please?
Okay. Animals do not sense time as does man, and even to man, because of his sectional and circumscribed view, time appears as a succession of events. But as man ascends, as he progresses inward, the enlarging view of this event procession is such that it is discerned more and more in its wholeness. That which formerly appeared as a succession of events then will be viewed as a whole and perfectly related cycle. In this way, will circular simultaneity increasingly displace the one-time consciousness of the linear sequence of events.
Why do you think when we get to the mansion worlds, it doesn't matter how long it takes to get through them? Because we start to divorce ourselves from the linear sequence of time events. So it doesn't matter how long it takes you to get from one place or one life to another, as long as you experience it in your fullest. Okay? So let me give you all an example. I'm an old man, I'm 70 years old, right? If I have five more years, it doesn't matter. Why? Because in reality, there is no time. It's just a way to keep track of what's going on. So whether I'm here or gone tomorrow, it won't matter because I will continue on in the next life. Okay, but we get all upset in this existence about time and how long we're going to be here because our lives are so short to start out with. Okay, so as we get older and we get closer and closer to walking through that door and puts us in the next life, then it's going to matter less and less to us that we're holding on to the existence we're in right now. Okay, so that's basically what they're saying here. All right. I guess that puts me back up, didn't it? There are seven different conceptions of space as it is conditioned by time. Space is measured by time, not time by space. That's just exactly opposite of the way science observes it. Okay. So to let y'all know. Space is measured by time, not by space. The confusion of the scientists, there we go, grows out of failure to recognize the reality of space. Space is not merely an intellectual concept of variation and relatedness to universe objects. Space is not empty, never has been. The only thing man knows which can even partially transcend space is mind. Mind can function independently of the concept of space-relatedness of material objects. What they're saying is that mind can transcend space altogether. Space is relatively and comparatively finite to all beings of creature status. The nearer consciousness approaches the awareness of the seven cosmic dimensions, the more does the concept of potential space approach ultimacy. But the space potency is truly ultimate only on the absolute level. And if you want to explain this paragraph, you're going to have to go back to my 26-week course, right?
Mm-hmm. So what's it talking about, the seven
levels of cosmic dimensions? Okay. The finite, okay, the Marantia, the spiritual, the absinite, the absolute, and the ultimate. I missed one there somewhere. I don't know which one I missed, but that's the seven levels of cosmic dimensions. When you go from one dimension to the next, how will we go from one dimension to the next? We're finite beings. When we step into the Marantia existence, we stepped into a totally new dimension. Okay? A dimension we don't use our finite body anymore. Okay, and then when we go from the Marantia dimension to the spiritual dimension, that our physical Marantia body changes so drastically, we really would not even recognize a Marantia pre-existence if it weren't for our mind memories of such. Okay, yeah. And these are the dimensions that we have to go through over time and space to get to the absolute and the ultimate dimension, right? Oh, I know what the one I missed is absinite. The absinite dimension, which we will be in when we get to Havona, right? And it's the absinite dimension that's in the four outer space levels also. Now, this is the stuff we all went through on the 26-week course I was talking about. And this is the stuff I talked about when I redid my book, where I just finished the book. All these different dimensions are mentioned according to what trinity and actualization of those trinities you're talking about in time and space. And the higher you go, the more the dimension changes. Well, eventually we'll get to the ultimate dimension, and by that time we'll be finaliters in paradise. Okay? Make sense? So these cosmic dimensions it's talking about is we can think of it this way. Mind can transcend all seven dimensions. The same mind. So the mindset we have on this planet, we can tap into the infinite spirit's mind circuit, and that same circuit we will be tapped into in all seven of the dimensions eventually. Make sense?
Hmm.
Heavy duty stuff, right?
Yeah, it is.
Any way you look at it, it's a little confusing, but it's worth learning, and you'll have a better understanding of where you are in the cosmic, you know, source of things. Okay, Diane, you're back up again there.
It must be apparent that universal reality has an expanding and always relative meaning on the ascending and perfecting levels of the cosmos. Ultimately, surviving mortals achieve identity in a seven-dimensional universe, which is what you just said.
You know, it's interesting, too, that before we step into the seventh dimension, what has to happen to us going from mortals to the higher levels? We have to step into light and life, don't we? Because all beings remain in the sixth dimension until the Supreme steps into full fruition. And at that exact moment, all sixth dimension beings will transform into seventh dimension beings. Okay? So it becomes really important because we transform all at the same time into seventh level beings, and that will be the what? The ultimate level for all of us. You see how this works? You see, kind of see why this information that I've been harping on for years now is important for us to understand so you can see where you are in the step of things and know where you're going, right? There's always hope, right? There's always hope that we're going to understand it one day. All right, Rodney, enlighten us again here.
The time-space concept of a mind of material origin is destined to undergo successive enlargements as the conscious and conceiving personality transcends the levels of the universes. When man attains the mind intervening between the material and the spiritual planes of existence, his ideas of time space will be enormously expanded, both as to quality of perception and quantity of experience. The enlarging cosmic conceptions of an advancing spirit personality are due to augmentations of both depth of insight and scope of consciousness. And as personality passes on upward and inward to the transcendental levels of deity likeness, this time-space concept will increasingly approximate the timeless and spaceless concepts of the absolute. Relatively, and in accordance with transcendental attainment, these concepts of the absolute level are to be envisioned by the children of ultimate destiny.
Now, who taught us this? Jesus did, right? This is the Isle of Crete he's talking on. Right? So all these advanced concepts that people didn't think Jesus taught, he taught when he was in the flesh. All this stuff is the basis of what we've been learning over our classes, right? Every bit.
Smart dude.
Huh? He was a smart dude. Yeah. I mean, all these advanced concepts, everybody says, well, I don't know if I understand this. What's the use of me knowing this? Because Jesus taught it to us and he wanted us to know. That's why we do it, okay? Not because I want to teach it. Let me put it that way. It's not that I want to teach it at all. I just want us to understand what Jesus wants us to know. That's what it boils down to. And it's not the simple stuff that's in the New Testament. he was much, much deeper than just that, right? And that's the point we want to make here. All right. Let me see if there's anything else. One thing I like about this paragraph, too, is the enlargement cosmic conceptions in the advancing spirit personal layer are due to the augmentations of both depth and insight and scope of consciousness. So as you become more and more aware of this, it increases your scope of depth, insight, and consciousness of the world around you. Okay? Not there. Awful lot there. Okay, Letch, would you take the next one?
Yes. The first stop on the way to Italy was at the island of Malta. Here, Jesus had a long talk with a downhearted.
Let me stop you. Read the first, the header there for us so that everybody knows where this
sorry.
Is.
On the way to Naples and Rome.
Okay.
The first stop on the way to Italy was at the island of Malta. Here, Jesus had a long talk with a downhearted and discouraged young man named Claudius. This fellow had contemplating taking his life, but when he had finished talking with the scribe of Damascus, he said, "I will face life like a man. I am through playing the coward. I will go back to my people and begin all over again." Shortly, he became an enthusiastic preacher of the cynics, and still later on, he joined hands with Peter in proclaiming Christianity in Rome and Naples. And after the death of Peter, he went on to Spain, preaching the gospel. But he never knew that the man who inspired him in Malta was the Jesus whom he subsequently proclaimed the world's deliverer.
Isn't it great that we can become born again over and over and over again? You know, that's the opportunity we face with Jesus over and over and over again. All right. Jane, would you take the next one? Let's see here. Let me change the screen. Okay.
Okay. at Syracuse, they spent a full week. The notable event of their stop here was the rehabilitation of Ezra, the backslidden Jew, who kept the tavern where Jesus and his companions stopped. Ezra was charmed by Jesus' approach and asked him to help him come back to the faith of Israel. He expressed his hopelessness by saying, "I want to be true son of Abraham, but I cannot find God." Said Jesus, if you truly want to find God, that desire is in itself evidence that you have already found him. Your trouble is not that you cannot find God, for the Father has already found you. Your trouble is simply that you do not know God. Have you not read in the prophet of Jeremiah, "You shall seek me and find me when you shall search for me with all your heart"? And again, does not the same prophet say, "And I will give you a heart to know me, that I am the Lord, and you shall belong to my people, and I will be your God"? And have you not also read in the scriptures where it says, "He looks down upon men, and if any will say, I have sinned and perverted that which was right, and it profited me not, then will God deliver that man's soul from darkness, and he shall see the light." And Ezra found God, and to the satisfaction of his soul later, this Jew, in association with a well-to-do Greek proselyte, built the first Christian church in Syracuse.
So God had already found him, didn't he? God was his thought adjuster was inside. This thought adjuster was just waiting for him to have the awakeningness of his soul that God was there so he could listen to the will of God within him. It was already there all the time. He just had to listen for it and look for it. So the fact that he was looking for it means that God was talking to him already. Mm-hmm. He just needed to look within himself to find the instructions he need. All right. At Messina, they stopped for only one day, but it was long enough to change the life of a small boy, a fruit vendor to whom Jesus bought fruit and in turn fed with the bread of life. The lad never forgot the words of Jesus and the kindly look which went with him when, placing his hand on the boy's shoulder, he said, "Farewell, my lad, be of good courage. And as you grow up to manhood and after you have fed the body, learn also to feed the soul. And my Father in heaven will be with you and go before you." And the lad became a devotee of the Mithraic religion and later on turned to the Christian faith. Just like Paul, right? All right. Sweetie, would you take the next one?
At last they reached Naples and felt they were not far from their destination, Rome. Donat had much business to translate.
And transact. Let me mute.
Transact in Naples. And aside from the time Jesus was required as interpreter, he and Gagnon spent their leisure visiting and exploring the city. Gagnon was becoming adept at sighting those who appeared to be in need. They found much poverty in the city, and distributed many alms. But Gagnon never understood the meaning of Jesus' words when, after he had given a coin to a street beggar, he refused to pause and speak comfortingly to the man. Said Jesus, "Why waste words on one who cannot perceive the meaning of what you say? The Spirit of the Father cannot teach and save one who has no capacity for sonship." What Jesus meant was that the man was not of normal mind, that he lacked the ability to respond to spirit leading.
So Jesus was trying to explain to him his mind was not normal, and he would never be normal, so he hasn't the capacity for spirit.
So he would never receive a thought adjuster.
He had never received the thought. If he had a thought adjuster, he would never understand it, right? Because he was mentally incapable of understanding that spirit influence within him. Okay? So there are people that are mentally insane that you cannot help. We know this because we live very close to one here in our neighborhood. She just has no capacity for anything. So, All right. Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
There was no outstanding experience in Naples. Jesus and the young man thoroughly canvassed the city and spread good cheer with many smiles upon hundreds of men, women, and children.
Okay, but that was about all that happened there, right? And Letch, would you take this last paragraph? And I have two more pictures to show you all here. Okay. Actually, three pictures, I believe it is.
From here, they went by way of Capua to Rome, making a stop of 3 days at Capua. By the Appian Way, they journeyed on beside their pack animals towards Rome, all three being anxious to see this mistress of empire and the greatest city in all the world.
All right. And these are pictures of their track around Italy first. Okay, and then we have pictures of the Appian Way.
Yep, I've seen these pictures before.
Yeah, when we studied this years ago. So sections of the Via Appia can still be seen in Ostia in Antica. Hmm. All right, and then next time we will go on to the world's religions. This next one's really interesting. So look forward to that coming up. Let's stop the share and reshare the prayer of acceptance here. All right. Jane, would you like to read the prayer of acceptance tonight?
Sure. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father, and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God, and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebadon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
Amen. Amen. And let me stop the share. And you'll see two of me, one on the big screen, one on each hand. Because I have two computers going at the same time. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. I hope you enjoyed this paper. 130 on the way to Rome. This is one of my favorite papers. It's got some deep, deep teachings from Jesus. For sure.
So glad I made it.
I'm glad you made it, too.
Beautiful papers. Good. Yes, wonderful.
Yeah.
The I next miss one, you guys, but thank you for always accepting me when I show up.
Oh, sure. We're always glad to have you, Jane, for sure. We're glad to have everyone. You know, I was looking back through all of our meetings and how many of our meetings got just a few listens, and some of them didn't get hardly at all. And I did get discouraged, but I needed to hear this message tonight. I really did. I get discouraged and get ready to quit, and then Jesus talks to me again.
Yeah, because look, Roger, I didn't interrupt, but at one point you read that, you know, Jesus inspired the man, okay, that was a Stoic, and he went, was he, Mitriac, I think, anyway, and he started to preach the religion of Jesus, Christianity, but he didn't know it was Jesus that gave him the message.
Yeah, he didn't.
So I mean, if they didn't even pay attention to him and they're preaching his religion.
Yeah.
How important is it if we remembered or not?
I know it's so hard to keep from getting discouraged. I'm done with my book. I've got the covers all done and stuff, and I'm going to put it out there on probably Amazon in the next week or two. But, you know, right before that I put this up, I've been depressed and discouraged about our numbers on YouTube and stuff. And we're out there trying to teach the book, and I keep losing sight that it's the book that's important, not whether they come and listen to our group or some other group or anything else. It's just the whole reason we're doing this is to spread the Urantia book. And that's what it's all about.
Even if it's not happening right now, it doesn't matter. It could happen a year from now.
Oh, yeah.
3 months from now.
Might happen after we're all gone, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I mean, the lesson was also about time today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this lesson is very good for what's going on right now.
It is. It is. I'm glad y'all came. I love you guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate all the support y'all have given me all these years and stuff. You just don't know. And I don't say it often enough, but I really appreciate each and every one of you. I really do. And so thanks for coming, listening to my ranting and raving sometimes. So, and thank you out there, everybody that listens. You know, subscribe and like us if you're on YouTube. Okay. So,
thank you.
Love you
thanks,
guys.
Bye, can't
Diane.
Bye,
everyone.
Okay. And we will see you Tuesday. We'll see you. We won't be having meetings on Sundays anymore, so it'll be just Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we just can't get the support on Sundays to make it worthwhile to sit here. So well, thank you guys, and we will see you later. All right,
guys. Thank you.
Love you guys too. All right, bye-bye. Have a good one.